to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Eternal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Feeling good today, folks. Feeling so good, man. I have been struggling with the weight loss, all that stuff, and I left the 300 club. I'm at 299 pounds. I've been kind of hovering that area, but I wanted to make sure I was really out. I was like hovering at 304 for about a month, it felt like. But I'm finally out of that club, and I promised myself that when I got out of that club, I was going to start riding my bike again. So I spent a good portion of the day working on my bicycle and getting it all ready for me to go ride again. And I'm just psyched, man. I have not been out of that club since early on in the pandemic in 2020. So it's been about 5 years. And damn it, I just feel good, man. I just feel good. I can tell my fitness is better because of my gym. I keep a little log of what all the exercises I'm doing in the gym. And I have a hard time seeing the weight loss on me, but I can tell that I feel better. I can tell my clothes fit better. My buddy gave me this shirt. I've only got to wear it once, but I was feeling a little self-conscious about it, and it's feeling better and better. And I can tell by my treadmill stats. I still got those on. Treadmill stats. That things are getting better. Here I go. Those are my Bible Billy, Baby Billy Bible Bonkers glasses. I love them. Anyways, excited to be here with you guys. This week, this is going to be a fun show. Thanks for everybody tuned in and watched me and Jeff Canada chop it up last week. And I hope you enjoyed that. He's one of my favorite musicians out there right now. And I just love that guy. And I love hanging out with him. Get a little timer, a little time going here. Blip. Look at that. We ain't going to forget nothing today. Before we, my hearing aid's coming up. Feels like an old man problem now. My hearing aid come out. Boy, better get that hearing aid back off in there. Woo, man, let's thank. We just got the one sponsor. One of our sponsors dropped off. That's okay. We're always looking for new sponsors. But our premium sponsor this week is still our good buddies at Jake's Quality Repair LLC up in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Jake's is your family-owned go-to semi-truck and trailer repair shop. Offers roadside service calls for the trucker in need. You got blowouts? Call Jake. You got trailer damage? Call Jake's. You driving a Volvo? Call Jake's. It's still going to be a Volvo, but he can fix the other stuff. You need a career change? Call Jake's. He also sells and services snowplows. He can have you out in these streets pushing that frozen white gold in no time. Make you some own money. They also offer all manner auto repair for all makes and sizes and custom hot rod work, too. Check out his Facebook page, Jake's Quality Repair LLC, for more information, or contact the man himself at 715-384-6699. Jake's Quality Repair LLC for your Central Wisconsin automotive needs. If you're a truck driver in If you're a truck driver in Central Wisconsin or driving through Wisconsin, the only phone number you need, 715-384-6699. Thank you, Jakes. Woo! Oh, my goodness. Man, also, I took my kid out to karaoke last night and watched him just kill it, man. Blow some people away. Kids got chops. Man, I feel good. It's been a good day already. Pretty day. You guys are watching this on Mother's Day. I hope you honored your moms or honored your wives who are mothers. I'm going to, we got a big day planned for Miss Rachel. We're going to take her out to dinner, all that good stuff. Normal Mother's Day stuff. My mom, of course, isn't around anymore, but holy man, that's how my kid really surprised me. So one of my mom's favorite songs of all time is called Rainy Days and Mondays by the Carpenters. And I take my kid out to karaoke, and my kid sings that song and just reduces me to tears. I am just bawling the whole time, you know. It was absolutely amazing. I kind of felt like my mom might just kind of be standing behind me, you know, with her hand on my shoulder, watching it with me. It was pretty spectacular. So, and I was already feeling some kind of way. We're working on the book. We're actually like I just read the first two chapters of like what the chapters are going to look like. And the developmental editor we're working with at the publishing house is just amazing. This dude just really has a knack for capturing my voice and keeping stuff legit to me. And making it sound like, keeping it sounding like me, you know, which is something I was concerned with when we did this book. We have decided I'm going to narrate the audiobook, because I told them that if they let anybody else narrate my audiobook, that my fans would throw a riot, which I suspect to be true. I told them the only options they had were to let John Goodman do it, or Billy Bob Thornton, but he has to do it in Carl's voice. So they decided maybe I should do it. I'm excited. We're working on it. It's become a real thing. You know, we got contracts, and we're just, and we're doing it in chronological order. So it's a little different than the way you guys experienced it in the podcast, which was just kind of the order I put it together in that made sense to me at the time. So it's really interesting. So now the episode about my mom's super beetle is now the second chapter of the book. And when I read it, I read the two chapters together about my dad's charger and my mom's, and it just, I'm not gonna lie, man, that second chapter, I always hoped when I did that episode that I did a good job of painting the picture of who she was to me as a young child, so that you guys understood when I talked about her later in life and the manipulation, the arguments and stuff, that you understood why I felt the way I did about things, because she was like my person growing up. And I always hoped that I did a good enough job speaking about her that it came across of like who she was to me. And after reading that chapter, it's there. The painting is perfect. I'm really happy with it. Also, super funny, because there's a sentence in that chapter that says, this is a written sentence in a book, says, "My people never had no money." And I had this writing teacher when I was in high school, Miss Gerard, and Miss Gerard hated the way I wrote. And she was always on me about grammar and proper sentence structure. And had I ever turned in a paper to her that said, my people ain't never had no money, she would have flipped her shit. But guess who's going to have a book, Miss Gerard? And guess who don't? That's right. You started banging one of your high school students and, I don't even know what you're doing now, but yeah, I'm going to have a book. Apparently there's cat hair all over this daggum table. Now, Mary Margaret, our very pregnant stray cat that hangs around, climbed up behind my green screen and had her babies. And she had four kittens. We lost one, sadly, the other day. And then she ate it, and that was weird. I mean, I know nature gonna nature. Nature don't waste protein. But when we brought the little sad dead kitten out, and she went over and sniffed it, and I guess I kind of thought we were about to have some sort of Disney grieving moment, and then she started eating it, and it was all right. Forgot you're an animal. That's why all the animal experts tell you not to anthropomorphize animals. Nature does not play games. Nature does not waste protein. Somebody said that meat is just stuck in my head. Whew. But as of right now, there are three little kittens. She moved them the other night. We had a big storm, so it fell off the shelf. I think it scared her, and she moved them somewhere else in the garage, but we know where they're at. She thinks we don't know they're here, and you may see her come in a minute and bitch at me a little bit, because she doesn't think I should be in here, because she thinks I don't know what's in here. She doesn't know my wife comes out here and sings to the kittens every morning. So she thinks she's being slick. But they're over there. You might hear them every once in a while. Start doing a little meow meow. Anyways, they're just stinking adorable. I'm sad we lost the one, but the other three are just adorable. And we have plans for them. So as I've been going through, when I'm working on the book, basically what we do is my manager gives me the transcript, and then I go through and correct everything. Transcript, of course, take out all the sponsors, all the needless crap that I talk about every episode. That's not going to be part of the book, and also make sure the car lingo's right, because the transcript just loses a lot in my accent and yada yada yada. So what I've taken to doing is, as I'm working on these chapters, I listen to that episode again and work through it that way. Because sometimes what the transcript says, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I was trying to say there. Also, I've instructed my wife to get a spray bottle full of water. And every time I say, you know, to spray me down with that bottle of water, because I say that way too much, you know. See? And I'm fighting it now. My apologies to you. Also, the word so, and the word and the word but. So, I got to try to see. Right back in. Oh, here she comes. Looking at me all suspicious. Anyways, after I've been going through these, so while I'm going through these chapters, I'm working on the Trans Am chapter right now. And I realized also when I did that chapter, I didn't spend very much time on the technical aspects of the Firebird, kind of like its history, which I do like to do that, but I'd kind of gotten out of the habit. And as always with these cars, I forgot some stories. And I've got many more stories about the Trans Am, but I'm going to tell you one particular story, because I was talking to an old oil field buddy of mine last week, and we were talking about the old heliport in Morgan City. And how, I guess, it's closed down and all that kind of stuff. And we were swapping stories. And I remembered a story about that car and a welder I had been friends with during that time period, and a well-earned ass-whipping he gave me in New Iberia one time. Well-earned. By the end of this story, y'all are going to be rooting for Derek Habert, the welder. And I don't blame you. Before we get too deep in South Louisiana, let's talk about Firebird in general. Also, I got a package in the P.O. box we're going to open at the end of the show. I'm really excited about it. One of the fans, a little letter and a package. And so I'm excited to show you guys what we got. You see, man, I can't remember the guy's name last week, sent us about 30 cars to add to our Hot Wheels donation collection. And I've just got them. I'm just putting them all over the place right now because I got to find a way to display them all. So I'm super psyched about that. I'm really excited to be helping out with these other people's charity that I'm so psyched about. Let's talk a little bit about the Firebird, because I learned some stuff when I was doing the research for this. I did not know this. The Firebird was a consolation prize for Pontiac. Pontiac had a whole other, I did not know, I'm not a Corvette guy, so I didn't know a lot of the history behind the Corvette, but the Pontiac wanted to build this, they had this thing dreamed up, this two-seater sports car based on an original concept car called the Banshee. I think it was like 1964, 1965, they cooked up this car. And if you go, it was codenamed, that car was actually never called the Banshee. They called it the Banshee later on. But it was codenamed XP-833. Go look that car up, and you're going to see a car basically looks like a C3 Corvette. It's a little smaller, a little lighter, but that's basically, it was intended to compete with the Ford Mustang. Pontiac made four different Banshee concepts between 1964 and 1988. The XP-833 was pretty damn similar to what we got in the third generation Corvette and the Opel GT. The only piece of design that made it from the Banshee, from the XP833, I'm just going to call it the Banshee because that's a mouthful, that XP bullshit. the only piece of design that made it from the Banshee to the Firebird was actually the taillights. The original Firebird that came out had the taillights that they put on the Banshee. At the time this happened, 1964, the head of Pontiac was none other than the very infamous John DeLorean. He called it the Mustang Fighter because it weighed 500 pounds less than a Corvette, but had the same horsepower, and it was going to be cheaper. If that car had hit the streets, Ford might have given up on the Mustang. I honestly believe, after reading the specs on that car, if that car had hit the streets, the Mustang might have lost some of its pass, some of its fire. This is ultimately what led to the demise of the Banshee, because the GM execs didn't want anything challenging the Corvette. They had lauded the Corvette. That's their top car. I mean, throughout the history of the Corvette, Camaros and Firebirds have been purposely detuned to not threaten the Corvette status as GM's top sports car. I mean, it seems to me like they just could have made the Corvette better, but I digress. So GM got their way, and the XP833 styling was rebadged as a Chevrolet and modified into what we now know today as a C3 Corvette. If you get the time, also look up the 1988, the fourth Banshee. I am sad that crazy looking machine never hit production. It gives straight up. Do y'all remember that movie, The Wraith, with Charlie Sheen, that crazy little Plymouth? I think it was a laser or something they had all decked out. It gives off Wraith vibes. That fourth Banshee they made in 88, and they watered the design down so bad for the fourth generation Camaro and Firebirds that it just makes me sad we never got that. That Banshee would have been cool as shit too. I would love to see that. There's one of them out there, and I'd sure like to see it in person. Regardless, GM, you know, was like, hey, we still got to give Pontiac something. So they gave Pontiac the use of the F platform as like a, sorry guys, we stole your car. And John DeLorean never forgave General Motors and started doing the cocaines. And y'all know how that story ends. He made a stainless steel time traveling machine. I better do an episode on that because I never owned one. I've driven one, but I never owned one. But I've always been kind of fascinated with the DeLorean. The Firebirds came out, but the Trans Am optional handling package was offered for the first time in 1969 based on the Trans Am Racing Series. The second generation Firebird was late to market because of tooling issues. So Pontiac made 69 Firebirds like well into 1970. But the second gen captured some of the Banshee's kind of swoopy design. And in my honest opinion, the second gen Trans Ams are my favorite cars ever, especially as they get later on in the 70s. They're just some of my, as far as looks wise, to me, that was the perfect car. Second gen was one of the first production cars to have a radio antenna laid in the windshield glass to keep the external lines of the car smooth. The 71 gave us the honeycomb wheels that look amazing on everything, but never as good as they do on a Trans Am. The second gen's when the Esprit luxury Firebird debuted, as well as the Formula. The Formula Firebird is basically a Trans Am package without the fender flare, shaker scoop, or those fender heat extractors, and is a little lower priced. They didn't go to that shovel nose until 74. That's when they got the shovel nose and the slotted taillights. And Chevrolet was kind of boastful. Chevrolet thought the Firebird would never touch the Camaro sales numbers. But what happened is, we all know, they made this movie called Smokey and the Bandit, and Trans Am started outselling Camaros left and right, and nobody at Chevrolet could figure out what the hell to do about it, even though they were all under the same umbrella. The Trans Am was a consolation prize that Pontiac made magic with. Mine, as we discussed before when we talked about it the first time, was a W72 Pontiac 400. Didn't have that piggish Oldsmobile 403 L80, that was mostly offered in high altitude and emission states because it satisfied more stringent emission standards. Not to say you can't get some power out of that Pontiac, out of that Oldsmobile. And a lot of people don't like that Pontiac motor because it was wildly underpowered, but you could accidentally bolt on stuff and get power out of that car. It wasn't hard to make that 400 Pontiac growl and get a little more ass under it. Of all the car manufacturers that ended up under GM's umbrella, Pontiac is my favorite, with Buick pulling for a close second. I love Buick styling. I've never owned a Buick, but I've worked on and I've driven a lot of Buicks, and I think they get slept on when folks discuss beautiful automotive design. The 1960 Electra, in my eyes, is one of the most beautiful production cars that's ever left alone. That car is stunning, absolutely gorgeous. I have kind of a knockoff one in a video game I play called Grand Theft Auto, and I enjoy cruising around the map in my 60 model Electra. Wish they'd bring that car to Forza, because then it would be really fun. All right, now that the technical information is out of the way, let's get into why a Cajun welder justifiably whipped the shit out of yours truly, and how that Trans Am contributed to the events that occurred in New Iberia on September 25th, 1999. I remember that date. I don't know why I remember that date, but I remember the date it happened. My buddy Derek, the welder, was about my height. He's 5'9". He's probably about 240 at the time. A little chubby, but he had a set of arms on him like anacondas. I saw him punch one of his cousins dead in the chest one time and drop this dude. He's a 6-foot dude, pretty solid dude. Derek was stout, bro. Derek was stout, man. He, before he became a welder, he was like a welder's helper. He was carrying around a 50-pound grinder all day. And this dude had a set of arms on him. Derek put the hurt on you if you got his hands on you. I was working on the platforms at the time out in the Gulf Coast. I was working for a company called Gulf Coast International Inspection right there in New Iberia. And me and him, that's how we met. We'd seen each other on jobs all the time. And, you know, welders and I was an x-ray hand. X-ray hands and welders go hand in hand, you know, where they're usually in our trailer yelling at us because they busted an x-ray. But in most of us, when you flew in and out of the platforms, you flew out of Lake Lourdes, which was the big PHI heliport in Morgan City. And like I said, it's closed now, but Derek had this, I always know Derek had this teal, it was like a 97 Z71 step side, get custom exhaust on it, custom rims, custom stereo. You could hear Wayne Toots and Master P from Two Camps Away when he cranked it up. He thought it was the finest machine in all of Louisiana. He loved that truck, man. It was a good-looking pickup. I still kind of like him, old teal green Z71s, or whatever that color is called. And back then, I had two bars that I frequented a lot. One of them was in Morgan City. I think it was called Timmy T's or something, but I can't really remember. But I think it was called Timmy T's. Don't hold me to that. There's a little gas station nearby that they would cash your paychecks, and none of us had bank accounts. And the little gas station sold liquor too, as gas stations in Louisiana do. But a whole mess of us that worked offshore would end up at this little bar at the end of Hitches and stuff. And I didn't work so much. I worked Hitches sometimes, but I was on 24-hour call, so I could get a text or a page at any time and have to fly out to a platform for 2 days and shoot a bunch of film and that kind of stuff. So we were on call, but, and then occasionally I worked Hitches, like doing lay down jobs and stuff like that, turnarounds. That was one of the little bars we would go to. It was a good place to shoot pool, get your head caved in if you didn't act right. And I slept in the parking lot many a night in that Trans Am after celebrating a little too hard about not being at work. And the other place that I would go to was in New Iberia on Highway 90. It's called America's Sports Bar. I think I told y'all a story about that place. I seen some of the best fights I ever seen in real life in the gravel parking lot of that joint. And I don't know if I fully captured this, but to be honest, that Trans Am made me the worst version of self I think I've ever been. I don't know why that car turned me into a cocky dickhead, but it did, and you couldn't tell me nothing. I often wish I could travel time just to slap the shit out of Trans Am Jerry Wayne. Not that it would have helped. The law slapped shit out of me. The transmission slapped shit out of me. Half a dozen other people and Derek slapped shit out of me. And I was coming off the worst heartbreak I'd ever had at that point in my life. And I was pretty miserable on the inside. And outwardly, I was trying to be everything I wasn't on the inside. This little gal named Sandy up in Wisconsin had just wrecked my worldview. And I was afraid everyone could see it all over me. So I put on the Trans Am Jerry Wayne mask and I wore it a while. And Trans Am Jerry Wayne was loud, and boisterous, and mouthy. A chip on my shoulder made out of tungsten. Had learned most of my fighting skills from people kicking my ass, but I still, for whatever reason, thought I could fight. Wore a lot of big belt buckles and loud-ass shirts and cowboy hat and snakeskin boots like I was a 1980s dick dancer. I love them white pythons. I was a problem, man. I was a fun one, but a problem nonetheless. Regardless, me and old Derek, he was kind of loud and boisterous too. We hit it off. We got stuck on a hitch together for 2 or 3 weeks, and man, we just started hanging out. We'd come back and we'd catch each other at the bar or whatever, and I don't know if Derek owned it, but either he and one of his buddies owned this fish camp out in Houma. He was from somewhere over like Port Fouchon. That's where he grew up. And they had a little fish camp down in Houma. Now when folks in Louisiana say camp, it don't mean the same thing as everywhere else. A camp in Louisiana could be anything from a shack in the swamp to a bunch of trailer houses stuck together on stilts, or even I went to one camp that the guy told me about his camp 2 weeks. We went out there to fish, and it was an old 1970s RV chained to a tree. Very rarely does the word camp in Louisiana mean tents. I didn't see many tents out there. And this camp we would go to, it was a single wide trailer, like a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, single wide trailer. And it was mounted up on telephone poles, cross bracing, about 8 foot up in the air. I don't think it probably survived a lot of hurricanes. Had the world's most terrifying staircase that appeared to be built out of pallet wood. I wish I knew how many times I drunkenly fell down those stairs. We would get on them stairs drunk and start shaking them, trying to knock each other down. And there were girls, you know. There were girls. Girls in Louisiana don't mind going to fish camp. There were girls. Whatever we reeled in from the bar, you know. We're having fun, being young. I always say I don't kiss and tell, but I was doing a whole bunch of kissing and not telling at that time. And it's kind of where the problem starts. Because girl I kept gravitating towards at the time was Derek's younger sister, who was my age. Derek was a little older than me. And he had a younger sister named Diane. And Diane was, I think she was maybe a year older than me or the same age as me. And we just gravitated towards each other. That little black-haired Cajun girl, she was a whole problem. If you can imagine, Derek didn't really support that because he knew me. And he spent a lot of time and efforts trying to deter that situation from occurring and was successful for for a while. And if I had a brain in my head, I would have too. But one of these nights I come back off a job and I know when it was. Whenever Hurricane Brett was coming into, they thought it was going to come hit Texas. Hurricane Brett, 1999. It was coming in the Gulf, so they evacuated us off all the rigs. And I was one of the first back in because I was on a helicopter flight. Derek was on, a lot of times the welders have to take crew boats. So he'd been on a crew boat down out of Freshwater City or something like that. And I came off a hitch, ended up at Timmy's, drinking, having a good time, running to Diane. Long story short, Derek shows up at the camp the next morning and catches me and her laid up in one of the bedrooms. And of course, then he drags my hungover ass out on the porch and reads me the riot act. You're my sister. I'm coming for you. That kind of stuff. Better not mess my sister around. I didn't want this to happen. Now you're on my shit list type shit, you know. I mean, he was okay, but he just wanted me to know, boy, if something went wrong with this, it was my fault. It was not going to be good. And we, you know, to Derek's credit, we all went fishing on the boat, and everything's Hakuna Matata for a couple of weeks, you know, a few weeks. And me and Diane, we wasn't serious. We were just having fun, you know. For starters, I was all brokenhearted over Sandy. I wasn't looking to fall in love with nobody like that. And she had an ex, and she never shut up about her ex. So I always sort of figured me and her had an expiration date, and I should have got out of it right when I got in it. I figured probably whenever he was locked up in Texas over some stupid shit for like 6 months or something. Her family, including Derek, hated that dude. And I was for sure an idiot for getting involved in that situation. And me and her had a couple arguments about it and stuff. I tried to kind of pull back on it and, like I said, I should have never done it. You know, don't mess with your buddy's sister. Unless you go marry that girl. It's bad juju, man. Yeah, it's her and I were going back and forth about it. We get in a fight at the bar one night, and she basically tells me where to stick it, you know, and she bails. She leaves the bar. She goes on. I forgot what kind of car. She had some little shit box. I don't remember what it was. Boy, she peeled out of that parking lot, told me we were done, all that kind of stuff. And of course, I stay at the bar drinking, and lo and behold, some local gal comes to my rescue. Don't remember her name, don't even remember what she looked like, other than she was kind of blonde, a little chubby. That's kind of like. And me and this old gal, we get a little tipsy and, you know, dancing, making out. Like young, dumb, drunk people do. Problem was, all Derek's friends hung out in that bar. So what do? They all called Derek. You know? Hey, sister's boyfriend's up here messing around with this other girl. I didn't get along with some of them anyways, you know. Boy, so, like midnight, 1 o'clock, Derek shows up at the bar. He's pissed off. He thinks I'm cheating on his sister. He's mad as hell. He shows up at the bar, starts a bunch of shit with me, calling me out, calling me names and stuff. Of course, the little chubby girl I've been hanging out with, she gets pissed off about the whole situation and leaves. So he screws my night up, and I just remember me and him end up out in this parking lot yelling at each other, and I'm worried the whole time he's going to take a swing on me, because I told you, I've seen this old boy drop a couple dudes, and I know I'm not going to make it. I'm not dumb and cocky enough to believe I'm going to win this fight. Also, I'm a little lit. And we end up yelling at each other in the parking lot before I get in Trans Am and peel out, head back to my spot in New Iberia, so place I was renting. Man, a week or two later, I get called out on a hitch, do a bunch of x-rays. Guess who one of the welders is? Oh, Derek's out there, man. And Derek busts an x-ray. And when I say bust an x-ray, basically that means a weld he did was insufficient to pass code. And when I looked at the film, it had some problems with it. So they had to cut it out and re-weld it. It was on a pipeline job, which that slows everything down. It pisses everybody off. And, you know, production manager's mad. Everybody's mad. He busts a couple x-rays on a weld. Or two, it was two different welds. He busts a couple x-rays. And I'm being honest with y'all. I was grading them hard because I'm still pissed at him, man. For all that shit happening at Timmy's. He ain't apologized or nothing. I know he's found out by now me and his sister wasn't dating. At that point, we were broke up. Maybe freshly broken up, but we were broken up. And, you know, he didn't call me a dog and everything else for running around on his sister, which I wasn't running around on. She left me at the bar, and we broke up. This is not like a Ross and Rachel thing. We weren't on a break. We were broke up. Anyway, I mean, he comes in the dark room where I'm reading film, and we get into it in that dark room. Boy, me and Derek just yelling at each other, and luckily we had some friends around, some cooler heads that calmed us down before we both end up getting fired off the job. But we're both pissed, man. We're glaring each other. The rest of that time on that job, man, we're just eyeballing each other, and there's little comments here and there, talking to our buddies on the job. And, you know, now I got beef with all the welders. It's not a good situation, man. It's not the kind of shit you want going on at work, man. In the meantime, Diane's calling my house and calling my cell phone, leaving messages. She wants to talk and all this kind of stuff. But the last thing Derek told me when we got off at Hitch, when I saw him in the parking lot at PHI, he said, we walking out of our cars, he was, look, man, just stay the hell away from my sister. And I was like, yeah, this feels like good advice this time. Wish I'd listened to you the first time. And it could have all just been over right there. I could have just went to the bar that I belonged at instead of going to Timmy's that night. I go out to Timmy's that night. Sure enough, Derek's here with all his buddies and waitress. He's over there running his mouth at me. I know he is. And I should have let shit go, man. I should have let shit go. I was partially in the wrong, or at least a good board in the wrong, but he's over there running his mouth about me, busting his x-rays and this and that. And I should have let the shit go. Or more importantly, I should have been a man and squared up with his ass right then and just took that ass whooping right then. That's what I should have done. Should have just went squared up with him and took the ass whooping then. But I didn't do that. Oh, man. I was pissed and petty. And I hate to even admit to y'all I did this because it's the worst thing you can do, mess with a man's car. And that's just as far as honesty goes, I got to tell you this. I got in the Trans Am and I run down to the closest Walmart I could find and bought me some of that plumbing ceiling tape because it's high temp. Bought a roll of that and I bought two cans of cheap red spray paint. And I eased back up to that bar, and I rolled it. His pickup was lifted. It was easy to get under, and I was a lot smaller then. And I rolled up under his pickup, and I securely taped those two cans of red spray paint right there at the collector. to the exhaust. Knowing that when he got hot enough, those cans of spray paint were going to pop. There's going to be red paint all over everything in that engine compartment and underneath that truck. Don't ever do that. It's a dirty pull. It's a dirty move. But I did it. Oh, I was pissed at him. I was, you know, a few drinks in. And so I leave that bar and I go back to New Iberia to the America Sports Bar. I drive back over to New Iberia and hang out in the America Sports Bar and just start getting blotto, lit, drunk, whatever the kids call it these days, hammered. Just start putting them down and just need to get some new scenery. Don't think I'm going to be going to Timmy's anymore. And then I get a page to go out on a job, which is always the worst when you're here. Because I had this boss, Glenn Brown, and I call Glenn Brown like, bro, I'm drunk. Get you some coffee in you, Shy. Get your ass down to that heliport. Don't be smelling like liquor when you get on the helicopter. They didn't give a shit. It was time to go to work. It's time to go to work. They knew you wasn't going to do nothing when you first got there. You were going to wait around 10 hours for a window so you could shoot x-rays. And back then, I'm sure they do now because everybody's got better phones and stuff. But back then, your cell phones didn't work out there on the rigs and stuff. So you'd get back off the rig. You'd have all these messages. People been trying to call you throughout the week. Or if it was really important, they could get a message through your company to you. But, you know, that was kind of frowned on. So you didn't do a lot of personal messages that way. I was so lit when I got called into work that I had forgot about what I'd done to Derek. And I was out there on that rig about a week. It was a CNG platform somewhere out in High Island Block. I worked a lot of them. And I was out there about a week. Well, you know, they rotate the operator crews in and out. It's a small community. We all kind of knew each other. Sure enough, the new operator crew shows up. Boy, they got news, man. Derek's going to beat your ass, man. Someone saw you messing with his truck at Timmy's. He's got red spray paint all over his driveway, all up in his engine compartment, his truck. Derek's looking to kick the shit out of you. Rightfully so. Rightfully so. You'll mess with a man's vehicle. And I do. Ain't nothing worse sitting on a rig for a week knowing you got an ass whooping coming. Like, I knew I'd taken shit too far. I knew I was done, man. And man, they get me on a helicopter to go back to the mainland. And I tell you, when that helicopter's landed, bro, I'm scouring that parking lot for that teal pickup. I don't see it no more. I knew I took shit too far. The helicopter lands, I run out of that parking lot, getting that Trans Am, check it all over, make sure ain't nobody jacked with it. Fired up, it fires up. I'm like, cool, man. He didn't know I was on a hitch. Ooh, I knew he was looking for me. I go over and cash my check, man. You know, I don't know why I stopped by Timmy's, man. I stopped by the bar, you know. Sure enough, everybody in there, Derek's looking for you, man. Derek's going to whoop your ass. I said, boy, I better go on back to my side of Louisiana. I'll go back to New Iberia. Lay low for a little while. See if maybe the shit will blow over, you know. I don't know if I would let that shit blow over, but I got this stupid idea in my head. Maybe I can go over there and just chill for a while and everything will blow over. The Trans Am had this little glitch every once in a while where the starter wouldn't engage the Bendix. You just turn it and just click, click, click. Battery be fully charged. Just click, click, click. And that little Bendix wouldn't pop out and engage the flywheel. And I had all these little jig tools that I had made, welding up rebar to clamps and stuff that I used for shooting 2-inch pipe. I always had them in the car. Had a piece of rebar on it, and I retch off in that engine hood and tap that starter a couple good whops with it, and boom, they would fire up. I was having too much fun to go change a starter. That didn't sound like fun to me. I was having too much fun drinking every night and hanging out in bars and chasing paper and cranking and banking, baby. You know, week two goes by, work a couple of little quick hitches, go out there and do a couple of 2-day jobs, this and that. And come back one of these nights, I'm hanging out there at America Sports Bar, and lo and behold, man, here comes one of Derek's, but I can't remember the dude's name. He's a big old boy, too. I'm over there shooting pool, and he shows up at the pool table. He says, "Derek's on the way, bro. Wants to talk to you." I said, "Bullshit, boy. I paid my tab so fast, I boogied my ass outside. I'm going to fire that Trans Am up, baby." I ran to that car, man. Fired that Trans Am up. Start backing up in that parking lot. Right when I'm pulling out that parking lot, he's turning in. And he whips that Z71, does him a donut in the parking lot, tries to get behind me. But that Z71 ain't going to keep up with that TA, baby. I put that hammer down on that Trans Am. Gone, baby. Walked that damn Z71. Just walked his ass, man. Like, whoo! I don't want tonight to be the night he catches me, man. I go back over that little spot I'm renting. Did occur to me that damn old Diane told him my ass. He didn't know where I lived because we didn't hang out much. It was just a little one-bedroom place, you know. We were always hanging out at the camp and stuff like that. His damn sister told him where I was, gave him the address. And I pulled up over there in the parking lot and I grabbed my shit in the car. I had my bag because I kept the bag in the car. And I grabbed my bag. I'm getting ready to go in the house, you know. Shut the car off. I hear that Z71 coming down the road, music blaring, that exhaust. And I see him pull in the parking lot. So shit, it's time to go again, boy. I go to crank that Trans Am up and click. Son of a bitch. Click, click, click. And I was so panicked, man. I didn't know what to do, dude. I just sat there clicking that starter. Knowing good well that damn thing wouldn't go fire up for me. Knowing good damn well it wouldn't go fire up. Click, click. I was still turning the key, clicking that starter when he yanked open the door and grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me out of the car. Yeah, and I'll say this about old Derek, boy. Derek was a gentleman, man. He yanked me out of that car. I rolled around in there's a little grass courtyard there. I rolled around that little grass courtyard, got my ass up, and he let me get to my feet, man. He was a gentleman. But it wasn't long after I was on my feet that first right hand caught me right in the solar plexus. I mean, right in the gut, boy. Just doubled me over. I think I nearly puked on that first hit, man. I'd already been drinking. And I'd like to tell y'all that I held my own in that fight. But I did not. He whipped my ass up and down that grass courtyard. Every time I got up, boy, he knocked my ass back down. He whooped the shit out there, put a whooping on me. Oh, it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. Next day, my face looked like I'd been using it to drive post-it. I was swole up, misshapen, lips split, nose bent over. I mean, just whooped the piss out of me. All over that damn that little courtyard, man. Whooped shit out of me. He had one of his buddies with him. He didn't get involved. It was just me and Derek, man. The worst part was he had his sister with him too. She's in there watching me get my ass whooped. And that was the end of it, you know. I'll say that to his credit. That was the end of it. It didn't. I stopped going to Timmy's because that was his spot, you know. Didn't feel right. We weren't like dicks to each other on the job side anymore or anything like that. After that, we were civil. You know, we got along all right, but we weren't ever friends again. We didn't go fishing anymore. we didn't hang out. That friendship was ruined. All because of me being a little petty piece of shit. Never became friends again. But we were civil to each other. You know, even after my face healed up. And I took a little bit of shit off his friends. I had to go back on a job, boy, just a few days after that ass whooping. All them welders out there, yeah, caught you slipping. Old Derek caught you slipping. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you were paying attention to the way you treat us welders and stuff. Like, this had nothing to do with that, dude. I was boning his sister. This all goes back to that. I messed with man's truck. You don't do that. And I know it sure cost him a bunch of time and effort to get all that red spray paint out of that truck. I bet somebody has that Z71 now. It's still got red spray. It's probably some kid's project now. It's still got red spray paint all in that engine compartment. There's probably been two generations of people cussed me over that red spray paint since then, and rightfully so. Karma'll get you, man. So that was the end of it. We never got in a fight again. Like, so we weren't ever friends again, but we would see each other at work and everything was okay until it was maybe a few months after that when I lit out for Florida. Yeah, because I was in Florida for Y2K. That didn't have nothing to do with that. I got stuck on a, well, I told y'all a story. I got stuck on a laydown barge. It pissed me off. And I decided to go to Florida. Worked in Florida for a while with that Trans Am. We'll wrap that up right there. That was not my proudest moment. Yeah, not all these stories are going to be. I did a lot of dumb shit, and that's one of the dumber things I ever done. Let's do some testimonials, if you will. Come on, your computer. Shit together today. At Dave Cooley, 2675. That was a good one, JW. These are comments from last week, episode with Jeff Canada, my good buddy, country music troubadour, Jeff Canada. High Horse is a fine song. I'm not much into country in the last 20 plus years, but it's a good song. Thanks, man. I think it's pretty good. The High Horse song reminds me of there was a band when I was in high school called the Tractors. Baby Likes to Dig It or something like that. It kind of has that Tractors feel, kind of groove to it. I love everything off the Wishing Well album. That's 100% one of my favorite albums. And I know I tell you guys all the time, but Monsters. Monsters is a cool song, man. That song speaks to me in many ways. Too Far Gone's another good one, too. Especially when you've had a little too much drink and you're thinking about your choices. But thanks for that, bro. I'm a big fan of Jeff Canada. That's why I wanted to have him on here. And, I know the guest ones aren't always your favorite episodes, but there's still going to be a few. I need to get my buddy Slade Ham over here. My buddy Slade Ham tells every time somebody started a podcast in Houston, because during the pandemic, everybody started a podcast. And, you know, the Whiskey Brothers had over 1,000 episodes. People be like, Slade, watch my podcast. Slade's like, when your podcast gets to 50 episodes, I'll watch it. Because so many of them petered out 10, 15 episodes in. But we're coming up on episode 50 here in the Wrecking Yard. I think it'd be really fun to have Slade Ham be on that episode on number 50. Let's see. What we got next? At Filson 5014. 100% they're going to resell the kit. Oh, we're talking about them laws and what they do with the marijuana and stuff they seize. I always wanted, man. It seemed like, God, but I mean, package that crap up, send it to Colorado, sell it, put the money back in the department or something. I don't know. I don't think burning it outside is the way to go. Yeah, here. Why did I lose my timer? Well, I have no idea what it is now. I must hit that damn button or something, some kind of way. At rob.db, God bless your country ass, Jerry Wayne. Thank you. Charity for children is the most honorable thing one can do. Not only is it a good thing to do, the smiles you get to make, you get, make you feel really good. Better than spending that money on more stuff we don't really need. That's, boy, that's where I'm at these days. I appreciate that sentiment. I'm not going to get to see the children's smiles or whatever, but I'm really excited to be a part of what these guys are doing. And we've talked to you guys a little bit about it. It's called drivendreams.org. And it's the founders, one of the founders of the Diecast Breakdown podcast, where they talk about diecast cars and all things related to diecast cars. And he thought it would be a cool idea to put some diecast cars in the hands of kids every year. And they started out donating them to food banks, and they've grown it into this really neat organization. And they have a day of giving every year in October, I believe, where they donate all these cars. And so I'm participating in it this year. It's not my charity. I'm not involved with how it's run or anything. I just thought it sounded like a great thing to do. And I'm happy just to be a part of one of the people like some of you that's just going to donate to this. And me and my wife been buying little toy cars, little diecast cars. Of course, one of our fans last week sent us a whole bunch of cars. And then this week, Rachel comes back from the P.O. box with this, and Donnie Mertens sent us a little message through Amazon. This package come through Amazon. He said, this is just an addition to your donation stock for the drivendreams.org for the charity this year, for the day of giving. Thanks for the Wrecking Yard. I hope to see you live if you ever come to Missouri. Donnie Mertens, if I book a show in Missouri close to you, you and your old lady, don't worry about tickets. Y'all are covered, man. I'll make sure you sit anywhere at that show you want to sit. We're gonna have us a little nightcap afterwards, maybe. Maybe a little drink, if you drink. If not, we'll have a cold Dr. Pepper and swap some lies. But this is really cool, Donnie. It's very magnanimous. It's a beautiful thing. I can't explain. Let's get it out here. Looks like that may be the top. Ooh. The old Freedom knife. Sucker sharpened like a knife. Whoa, what is this? Holy cow, dude. Bruh, look at this, man. It's a 50 pack of Hot Wheels vehicles. This is cool, Donnie. I didn't even know they made such a thing. A 50 pack of Hot Wheels vehicles. That's cool. Okay, Bill. Cut yourself wide open. Live action, Turtle Man. You ever watch Turtle Man? Love that dude. It's live. Holy cow. I ain't gonna pull all these off out, but wow, I've never seen Hot Wheels package like that before. Look at that. Is that not freaking cool, man? What we got here? Roger Dodger. Dude, these are some cool cars too. Holy, look at that, 69 Mercury Cyclone. Tell me that ain't going to make some kid grit. This is how we make new car people. This is how we make new car people. You put that 69 Mercury Cyclone in some kid's hand, he's going to think about that car for the rest of his life. This is how we make car people. This is exciting. Dadgummit, Donnie. God bless you, man. For real, whatever you believe in. But God bless you. This is just, like I said, it's magnanimous I mean, this is the coolest. I didn't even know they came like this. What a cool ass move. Look at that. The quick bite. Fuego fajitas, little food truck. Bro, that's how you make, that's how you inspire little minds, man. That's beautiful. What a beautiful thing. I'm so excited to be a part of this custom 1953 Cadillac pickup. Look at that. What's up, man? That's cool. Thank you, Donnie. This is beautiful. Like I said, I get to Missouri. You don't worry about your tickets, man. You first class in the VIP. I got you, boo. I know that ain't why you did it, but I'm just telling you, you gotta give me an opportunity to do something nice for you. Oh, this is cool, man. So we're like 50 plus 30 plus the 10 I've got collected up. That's 90 cars we're going to put in the hands of kids come October. Is that not cool, man? Does that not make you smile a little bit? It makes me smile. Makes me really happy, man. Okay, I got to reach out to my buddies from Diecast Breakdown and send them pictures of all this. They're going to be tickled to death. You guys are watching, man. Hit me up, dude. That just tickles the shit out of me. Thank you, Donnie. I cannot wait to do this. All right, let's go back here. And we're going to do some more of these episodes. I'm not going to do them all at once, but as I'm going through these chapters, I'm remembering I got some more stories about the Trans Am I want to tell too. And we're gonna do that. We're gonna tell some of these stories. But you know, that's a story of how I got on the wrong side of Derek Haber. Derek Haber whooped my ass. I had it coming. I told you by the end of that story, you'd be on his side. You probably still sitting there mad at me, like you duct tape spray paint to a man's car. You piece of shit. Yeah, that was a dirty dog move. That's really that's the whole point this week's episode, baby. If there's a point to be gleaned, you can't outrun an ass whooping. If you know it's coming, it's better get it over with. I wish I had just been a man and squared off with him that first time at bar, took that ass whooping then, because I would have looked a whole lot better for it. After that, everybody knew I was chicken shit for trying to get away from him. And then what I did, it was so dirty. So I wish I'd just taken that ass whooping I had coming in the beginning. And then he would have looked like a dick later on when he found out that me and his sister wasn't even dating anymore. You know, albeit fresh as it was, we were broke up. But that's how it is. You can't outrun an ass whooping you got coming to you. Everybody thinks they can. I used to think I could, but you can't. And that don't matter if it's from the law or the IRS or even friends that ain't friends no more. If you got an ass whooping coming to you and you know you earned it, better off just take it up front. Promise you, man, running from it don't do nothing. Sometimes you just got to suck it up and pay the piper. And had I done that, it would have saved me for sure a few stressful ass weeks and ruined nights and maybe a friendship. We might have ended up still being friends after all that, you know? And I just manned up the first time instead of doing all that other chicken shit. You can't be friends with a man that got your engine compartment spray painted red. This is one of my rules. I always tell you I got the rules. Don't buy a car at night. Don't buy a stripper breakfast. Also, don't mess with another man's machine. You mess with another man's vehicle, you got an ass whooping coming to you, and there ain't no two ways around it. And I tell you that because I've doled one out that somebody messed with one of my machines. And I thought about old Derek when it happened. Like, I realized, you know, it taught me something. You can't outrun an ass whooping. You got it coming. You better just take it and get it over with. Hope you guys are having a good week. I hope you're meeting your goals, things you want out of life, the stuff you're trying to do. I'm so blown away by the donations on the cars. I cannot tell you how much it tickles me and how much it makes me smile. Donnie, that's a beautiful move, man. Really, really something special there. And you're gonna make about 50 kids smile. That's 50 kids out there that ain't got ain't got nothing. Ain't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Every one of them going to have a smile on their face. That's you. And that's beautiful. It don't get no more beautiful than that. I knew my fans would be, I knew the people that watch this would be about this. And it just makes me so happy that we're going to achieve a little good here. We're going to make about 90 kids smile, man. You make 90 kids smile, you're doing something right in the Lord's eyes, as far as I'm concerned. Especially kids that don't often have a lot to smile about. This is beautiful. Boy, I thought there was a ghost. I'm looking in the camera thing. I saw my shadow move across there. Thought the ghost of Christmas past or Derek Haber done showed up to get me. Went across it. I looked to see if it was Corvette o'clock, and I saw a shadow move across there. Yeah, it says 80 degrees in here. Don't feel that bad today, though, but I got on this little Wiccan shirt. It's my buddy's racing team, the Naked Nana racing team up there in North Carolina. My good buddy Fritz. And they do a lot of cool things, too, and they do a bunch of cannonball racing. He's got a really cool old Plymouth, and he's got a lot of cool stuff. He's got a lot of old cop cars and stuff. He's a neat dude. I hope your week's going well for you guys, man. I hope you're skirting around obstacles like Teflon, bro. Like bacon grease on a skillet, man. Moving and grooving. And if you're struggling with stuff like I've been, just know it gets better. Know it gets better, man. It really does. I feel so good today. So my fitness is improving. I'm about to get that bicycle out tomorrow. I'm going to take me a little bicycle ride. And I'm beyond psyched about the idea of getting back on my bicycle because I have missed it. It came at a point where I really needed it, and I've been missing it bad. Now I think I'm going to try to talk my brother into it. We did the 40 on 40. Let's do 50 on 50. But not in Galveston this time. Maybe somewhere up north where it's less hot. Maybe Colorado. It's too many hills. I don't know. We'll find a place. Rooting for you guys. You know, I'm going to tell you that till you believe it. I'm rooting for you guys. Got your back. Enough room at the table for everybody. I just want to see you all make it. I want to see every one of you find the things in life you're looking for. That's really what I wish for all the people in my life. Y'all are people in my life. And if you're suffering or you're going through a rough time, don't be afraid to reach out to folks for help, man. Don't be afraid. Whatever you do, I wrote a piece about depression this week. I've been struggling with it. I was struggling with it for a couple months there. And when I go into depression, I go into hermit mode, and I quit talking to everybody. And it's just, and then I convince myself that I can't call everybody back because they're all going to hate me because I ain't been talking to them. And that's never been the case with my friends. My friends are always glad to hear me when I pop up out of my shell. And there ain't nothing wrong with asking for help. You know, these days I know how to combat mine, but if you're struggling with stuff like that and you don't know how to combat it yet, there ain't nothing wrong with asking for help. And there, you know, and I'm sure there's still a little bit of stigma out there, but you know what? Men don't talk enough about that shit. We can talk about that shit here. I don't care. My granddad, they didn't talk about that shit. My dad and his brothers didn't talk about that shit. And I think it affected them a great deal, whether they talked about it or not. So I ain't saying a bunch of yapping fixes anything. I don't personally take a whole lot of stock in talk therapy beyond just kind of getting to the root of the problem and figuring out what it is. You still got to take action. You got to take action and solve the problem. But sometimes just talking about things lets other people know it's okay to talk about things. I'm rooting for you guys. I don't want none of you feeling that way. And every once in a while I hear stories make me sad, man. I just don't want that for you guys. I'm rooting for y'all. As always, I appreciate you sharing a piece of your Sunday with me. I look forward to hanging out in the chat and talking to you guys. And I'm glad y'all are here. I'm rooting for you. Y'all, you guys, Y'all be safety. I say that all the time. It's a buddy of mine used to say that in the oil field. Be safety. There's some bad safety meeting we're a part of where somebody screwed up. Be safety. Be safety. And I'll catch you guys next week. Remember, I'm JW. I love you. Man, I forgot to show you. This one's cool too. I really like this one. 1984 Mustang SBO Turbo. That's a pretty cool Hot Wheel. This is how you make car people. Oh, cats come drive at me. I ain't messing with your babies. I'm almost done. She don't want me in here. Love you guys.